school of winds and winds of this off the elements and it's raining on charades.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Radio Charades. I'm Owen Roberts, with me as always, Toby Frost.
Hi there.
What's a special edition of Radio Charades, I hear you ask?
What's a special edition of Radio Charades?
It's funny you should ask that, Tobes.
Yeah.
A special edition of Radio Charades is where we throw out all the rules and do what the hell we want.
Freestyling.
Freestyle, yeah. We're not going to tell you how we are. How are you, Tobes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're not going to tell you any news.
No.
What's going on in the world, Tobes?
Nothing.
Right. We're just going to talk about a topic for a while.
Yeah.
A lot of our listeners probably don't realise this, Toby.
Right.
But before Toby Frost was an award-winning podcaster tier.
Yeah.
And in fact, during his time as a podcaster.
Yeah.
He was a famous author.
Yeah.
You're a famous author.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've written a series of books.
I have as well. Yeah. I mean, this is before I got into the big leagues with podcasts.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a warm-up for the whole podcasting thing.
Less and less cool for books these days with Radio Charades.
Yeah, that's
existing.
Right.
Existing.
Yeah, yeah.
Half of Radio Charades don't know how to read. I mean the
people. I mean you.
I mean me.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to accuse our listeners of being illiterate.
But they have written in, haven't they?
Some of our listeners have written in, yeah. So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the books or the series of books you've written.
Okay. I started off wanting to write really serious, sensible books, and that got me nowhere. And the really stupid book that I started writing and sending to you as a joke is the one that got published, which was Space Captain Smith, which, how can I describe it? Kind of Black Adam meets Flashman in Space, I suppose. A little bit steampunk. They're kind of set in a sort of comically Britishized space empire, and there's a little parody of other science fiction in there. And they're about a character called Isambard Smith, who is a sort of moderately successful but very enthusiastic space captain, and his adventures, really.
Lovable but a bit hapless.
Hapless is a good word, I think, yes. Yeah. There's probably a little bit of Prince George from Blackadder in there, I suspect, but he's probably a bit more competent than that.
Definitely more competent than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a half brother of Biggles.
Yes. Yes,
yeah, not quite there.
No, slightly sort of nicer and
willing.
Yeah. Probably a bit of Dan Dare too, but Dare and Biggles are probably closely related.
And very competent, which I'm not.
I don't think he is. No, that's true.
So, how many books have there been now?
There are now 5, and there are shortly to be 6.
So that, which is why we're doing this episode.
Because
The Pincers of Death.
Yes,
comes out very soon.
Yes, October the 9th, I'm told.
Okay, well, who knows when this podcast will be out. We hope it's before October the 9th.
Yeah, buy one for Christmas.
Definitely.
In the sale that's just coming up.
Yeah. This is a Christmas book, definitely.
Very festive.
I have previously given it as Christmas gifts, and they have been incredibly well received.
That's very nice.
Because I think it's just very nicely readable.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And Christmas books, I think they're quite good as gifts for people who you're not quite sure about. I don't mean that in a negative way.
Would you like them or not?
Like, somebody who you know sort of casually, like he's one of your mum's friend's sons.
Oh, I see,
You don't know very well.
Yeah.
But you know, he likes a drink and he likes a laugh. Well,
yeah.
Space Captain Smith.
There you go. Yeah.
I certainly sent a few in various different I sent one to Australia.
Did you?
Yeah, deliberately.
Oh, right.
It wasn't an accident.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So there are copies in Australia. I think there's multiple copies because I think Dave left some there as well.
Right, yeah. Well, there must be copies in Australia, actually, because some guys from Australia did actually do a play of it a little while ago. So, that was quite exciting, actually. I'm told there will be pictures to follow.
I think I saw some set pictures.
There were some set pictures, and there's a few more, I think. So hopefully that'll be coming up fairly soon. But, you actually had a reasonably large amount to blame, really, in the Space Captain Smith world, because you were the person who sort of first said it was all right, and I should carry on doing it. When I first started, I was very uncertain. I wrote this chapter at a time, kind of not quite knowing where I was going with it. You'd never guess that from the finished product. And I sort of thought, well, I should find out if this is any good. And I think you were the first person I actually sort of tested it out on.
I think so.
Because, you watch a bad film or something and you just forget about it. But if you watch a bad comedy, you remember how bad it was.
Yeah.
So, it seemed like the right thing to do. But I think you were reading H.G. Wells at the time, so you're probably well equipped to deal with that kind of business.
Probably. So, I have read some H.G. Wells. Yeah, one of the reasons why I'd like to do this podcast special with you, Tobes, is because I feel terribly guilty, because this is the first of your books that I haven't proofread in any way.
Yeah, well...
Normally, I'm ahead of the punters, and
I feel slightly guilty about that.
It's just not come together in terms of how busy we both have been in various directions, isn't it?
You've recently acquired this thing called a life, and I regard this as a personal betrayal, of course.
I've recently had the addition of a life into my family, which means the removal of life from my life.
Give me a minute to get my head around that.
Yeah, it's just the family thing.
Yeah. And otherwise, we'd just sort of hang around the skateboard park and...
We would. It would be gnarly and exactly. You'd bring the boom box.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'd bring that piece of cardboard that we spin around on our heads.
That's right, yeah.
I think that, well, for me, I always thought at the beginning, I'm not convinced that I'm a good proofreader for this. I think I'm a good proofreader because I'm not very good at reading, which means I have to read it very carefully.
Yes.
So I read it. I never make assumptions when I'm reading.
Yeah.
I always read every word, and if I don't get it, I go back to the beginning of the sentence and I read the whole thing again. And I'm very, very meticulous like that.
Yeah.
And I've got a good eye for continuity. The reason I thought I'd be a bad proofreader for you is because reading your books is like being in the pub with you. And I
take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I think you should take that.
Starts off fairly coherent, and by the end, you're just crying, really.
We'd laugh at that.
Of course, yeah.
And also, of course, you know, I did see all of my jokes just in print finally.
At long last.
Years of you stealing my material finally come to fruition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like I felt a spiritual part to that book.
I think it might be End of Empires where you actually get mentioned in the credits.
Yes, you credit me with one joke on one page.
Das Booty.
Yes, Das Booty.
I think
I could probably cite some other
maybe one or two. Yeah.
Right. Right, how should we do this? Should we dip in and out of questions?
Yeah, let's dip in and out of questions. I think that's a good plan.
I think the questions are going to take us some pretty strange directions. Because I asked your Facebook group,
yes,
the Space Captain Smith Facebook group.
Yep, those guys.
And they are a delightful bunch of readers, aren't they?
Yes, sorry, I was just smiling.
Like, if you didn't know they were people who would enjoy your book, as soon as you've talked to them on Facebook,
you'd be selling it to them.
Oh, these are the kind of people who'd really like Toby's book, because some of the questions are just out there.
Okay.
And some of the questions, obviously, I wanted the questions to be secret from you, so you didn't know them.
Yeah.
So I was hoping people would just email them to me.
Rather than type them up on my Facebook.
Mostly, page. They just sent them out to you on Facebook. Never mind.
Don't worry, I would have forgotten them by now. Yeah.
So first question comes from Dave, our friend Dave.
All right, Dave, yeah.
So, actually, before we get into this, what are your fans like? I mean, do you know many of them? Because presumably you've met a few at signings. And
they've all been really nice, actually.
Is that a defining feature? Is nice.
Yeah, the guys I've met have been really nice. Quite a few of them met at signings, and quite a lot of them I've known from steampunk events, which, funnily enough, there is a slight overlap to my readers.
A little bit.
And people who own top hats and goggles. and they have all been really nice guys, and I made quite a few friends from doing those events. And they are now sort of more, as much catching up with mates as it is sort of selling books and things like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, they've all been really quite sane, actually, and quite, they're quite normal. Isn't that strange? No, they're all really nice guys, actually. So it's been very, very, it is still really, really pleasant when someone says they've enjoyed the books, actually.
Yeah.
And, I got a Facebook message like that from someone a few days ago. I was like, oh, wow, great.
Well, in fact, this thing in Australia, the way they put it, amazing.
It's really...
A bit surreal.
Yeah, it's surreal, and it's extremely complimentary, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, to have someone sort of put that amount of trust or whatever in something you've written, I think that's, it's great,
Yeah. I mean, they all seem barking, but lovely.
Right.
From Facebook, anyway.
Yeah.
You say guys, do you mean that in the colloquial sense, or is it a predominantly male audience?
Good question, actually. I don't know. I mean, I would have thought that sort of stereotypically it's kind of, a little bit dad. But actually, no, I'm not sure about that, because I think sort of everybody gets the joke, So yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. I think the steampunk...
You don't think you're too subtle for some people?
No, too subtle for ladies. Too crude, I think. You can edit that. No.
I'm putting that on your gravestone, mate.
Too subtle.
Toby Frost, too subtle for ladies.
It's on my business cards already. No, I think it's actually been quite a wide spread of people, actually.
Yeah.
Certainly the steampunk things, as many girls as blokes, definitely.
Cool. Yeah. Good. I know some girls who've read it and really enjoyed it. So, yeah. So, yeah. Dave asks, so Toby, does your wife suffer from night farts?
I saw that, actually.
This is about right for Dave, isn't it?
The answer is, no, I don't have a map. I just follow the other cars around the racetrack.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
if you don't know where that's from, it's Vic and Bob.
Yes.
Being very funny.
I think watching that around Dave's house is actually the hardest I've laughed
ever in my life. Yeah, we watched a lot of that on, I think, round and round on loop.
Yeah.
Getting quite drunk at the time,
I think. Yes.
Okay, moving on. Oh, no, this is from... I won't read people's full names, because obviously that would seem like a betrayal of innocence. No. Protection for the... What's that phrase? Names have been changed to protect the innocent. They haven't been changed. I'm just reading first names.
Okay, that'll do. Yeah.
Thomas asks, on average, how many cups of tea does it take to write a book?
That is a very difficult question.
I think he's confused. Because
it's words, isn't it?
Don't you do it on a computer now? Does that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to write it just dipping my finger, and right. Yeah, it didn't get me very far. Mm-hmm. In the exciting bits, you don't know whether to sort of scribble or drink or lick your finger or what, really. Yeah, how many cups of tea? I think quite a lot. I mean, if I'm writing a last session, that could be sort of, you know, 3 or 4 cups of tea whilst I'm writing in a day.
Right.
Okay. And if I'm writing about 500 words a day, and there's about 70,000 words in the book, or maybe 80,000...
You've tricked yourself into some maths.
That's some maths, yeah. Help me, Owen!
No.
Oh, that it's many.
It's the evening, I don't many. Know. Actually, so you reckon on a good session, you're knocking out 500 words?
Yep.
And that's 3 cups of tea?
Yep.
And you want 80,000?
Yep, so that's 160... Sessions.
Times by your 3.
Times by your 3, which is, oh my god, it's 480.
Sounds about right. That's a lot of cups of tea.
Yeah, the only other thing about that was that someone had written in the evening when I would be drinking just dubious wine or beer. Absinthe, with my fellow French artists.
How drunk can you actually get before writing? Ends up being total drivel.
I think it's somewhere between 3 and 4 glasses of wine, actually.
Is it about the same time when you get really good at pool?
Yeah, it probably is. The mystery bit where you're really good at pool. Yeah, it probably is about the...
2 pints and I'm suddenly competent. 3 pints, I'm totally inept.
You could probably theme an evening around this, couldn't you? About things to do. Yeah,
it's like that window.
Well, yeah, you could probably work this out really well. But yeah, you hit the time and you don't... Because the trouble is, when you're playing pool, you think, oh, I'm really good. If I have another drink, I'll just top myself up and I'll stay really good. Yeah. Terrible.
Right.
Terrible. It's fall into the pool table. I mean, while I was writing...
Sports Talk from Toby and Owen.
Yeah. That was badminton.
When you were writing...
Yeah. Quite a lot of the time, I would be writing in the evenings and I would be drinking dubious wine or beer. So I reckon probably Space Captain Smith and some of the others were probably written where I couldn't legally drive a car. So, right. You know, it's hard to say on the tee front, but... That's a good guess, anyway.
Right, so it's several hundred.
Mm.
Cover art for Pincers of Death.
Yes.
Looking good.
Thank you.
Billy asks, in the cover artwork, how come Rihanna doesn't have dreads?
This is going to be like Dr. Watson's mysterious bullet wound that he occasionally has in his arm and in his leg. I think it's a bit of both, actually, because the mental image I always had of her was probably without dreads, although they are mentioned in several of the books.
Yeah.
Because it's somewhere between Princess Leia, Kate Bush, the lady out of Firefly, whose name I can't remember, and probably just a sort of generic hippie type.
Right.
So, you know, hence my brain doesn't really remember us having the dreadlocks except when it's convenient.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they vary. I think
she doesn't always have them.
No, I think that's the answer.
One of your readers has said on here.
I think there is one where she said, I think it's Rothel Lemming member, it says she's actually has lost them somewhere.
Right.
So, yeah.
How careless.
Yes, indeed. In a state of confusion.
Right, then we get on to the set of questions which might illustrate your readers more.
Right.
Stephen asks, where do babies come from?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. By book six, you'll find out.
By book six.
Prince of Death will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the atomic weight of plutonium?
Again, that's in Pincers of Death.
Cracking.
It's between 5 and 4.
But... somewhere between 5 and 4.
Yeah.
How do they get the ships in the bottles?
Well, that's because you put them in with the masts down, and then you carefully raise the masts once the ship is in the bottle, and you withdraw the piece of string that you used to raise the masts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Also, if it takes a man 3 days to walk to London, what colour is my granny's cat?
Blue.
Nice. Okay, good. Onwards then. Pete asks, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck actually be able to chuck? I put an extra chuck in there for fun.
You put some chucks in there. How much wood would a woodchuck actually be able to chuck? Well, he's quite small, isn't he? He's like a squirrel, isn't he?
Is that what a woodchuck is? Like a chipmunk type thing?
He's got a gopher, I think. So I reckon he would be able to chuck a piece of wood perhaps slightly larger than a pencil.
So we're talking twig rather than wood.
Yeah, I think we're talking twig, actually, yeah. Yeah, twig or little
stuff. Right, there you go then, Pete. A pitifully small amount.
I think so, yeah. He's not going to be doing the shot push or anything, or tossing a cable or anything.
No, right.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, there you go.
What's the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
African European.
Oh, damn you, sir. Good question. And then I chime in on your Facebook telling people to email instead of...
Stop it, it's getting silly.
This is a question we're probably going to come back to some more with other people.
Yep.
Because there's definitely another question about this. Did a real person inspire Rihanna? Sorry, that's Susie.
Gosh, I don't think so. Not anyone in particular I have ever met, I don't think. As I say, you know, she's kind of a mixture of different people, yeah, you've got sort of Princess Leia and Kate Bush and all the rest of it. I think also she's sort of fulfills a kind of function of being the ship's psychic. Oh, Deanna Troi, other person.
Yeah.
Deanna Troi, the sort of not very useful psychic from Star Trek.
Yeah, she also fills the role of daft infatuation.
Yes,
as well,
absolutely. Know,
for
Smith.
She's almost cardboard cutout for that.
Yeah, absolutely. She's definitely there for that.
And certainly to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about the characters, which I was surprisingly aware of when I wrote it, was I wanted them all to be able to argue with each other at any point or to have that kind of conflict so they could do silly things.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's there as a kind of foil, if you like, to Smith in that way. And it's actually she's quite hard to write, actually, because quite often she's the voice of reason. And the trouble about the voice of reason is it's not particularly funny, and it stops the other people sometimes having their fun. So you have to sort of fight a little bit to stop her to stop her turning into this kind of mum-like character.
Right.
She says, don't do that.
Right.
So you have to give her silly things to do as well. And, you know, I think they succeed, but that she's slightly harder to write, actually, I think. Than the
funny,
other
when I read it, Surik's the voice of reason. Maybe that says more about me than it does about you.
You're fine, don't I? Yeah, just put that down.
I'm polishing it. Ian asks, what does it take to get you out of the Three Counties area? Now, Ian has tried to organise you previously to leave the Three Counties area, hasn't he? Ian knows. I've met Ian a couple of times. Lovely chap.
Yes. Oh, goodness me. I mean, sort of Milton-like events, so the heavens open and God reaches down and moves me like a chess piece.
Right, and then you contemplate it.
Yeah, I think actually I have left the Three Counties area to go to an event in Kent earlier this year, which is quite exciting. And
Kent's hardly exotic. It's got to be, how far outside Three Counties is Kent?
It was sunny Kent.
It's sunny.
Funny Kent, yeah. Okay. And there I was on the beach, sipping my pina colada with the Prodigy in Kent. And I've got another one up in Leicester. So, you know, I have left the Three Counties area. But it's weird.
It's strange out there. It's
strange.
Yeah. Okay. Martin asks, will there be more Space Captain Smith books, or is Pincers of Death the last one?
Golly.
And then he sobs and says, I hope not.
Oh, dear Martin. I've obviously disturbed his equilibrium and his stiff upper lip. I would like to do more. I think what I really, really don't want to do is to do the same thing over and over again with diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen in other comedies, naming no names, and, you know, it's really not what I want to do. I think you get some comedies where the characters, the jokes end up being replaced by the characters just doing their thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to get to that point. And some of the characters, you know, when I got to the End of Empires, which is obviously very lemming heavy, I sort of thought to myself, there are no more lemming jokes. You know, I have done every joke about a lemming I can think of. They hibernate, they put things in their cheeks, they run off cliffs, they jump off cliffs again. You know, everything. So I think you have to be a bit careful because things do have a finite life. On the other hand, I could really see more adventures in Smith's world and possibly with Smith himself.
Yeah.
I think it will be interesting. You know, I don't want to give anything away about what happens in this story, but it will be interesting to see what he was doing if he wasn't sort of out on secret missions and things like that.
Right.
So that might be interesting, maybe even to sort of push him forward in life. I mean, I'm sitting here with you, who I've known since I was like 15 or something, and I can see some baby wipes over there, and it's like you're a grown-up or something. And it'll be very strange to see how Smith actually handles the married life or something like that.
Yeah.
Terribly, I should think. So, you know, there's lots of potential there. And there are other characters as well. That would be interesting. There are secondary characters who have obviously got their own stories. And they would be, some of them will be interesting and have certainly got, I think, the mileage to have, you know, a whole new book. So
yeah.
I wouldn't like to say for certain that I'm going to leave Smith or indeed Smith's world. There's a lot of potential there. It's just working out how to make the best use of it.
Yeah, you've written non-comedy books before.
Yes.
Would you ever write a serious novel in the Space Cowboy Smith world, or would that be... Because I remember we had a conversation once which basically was talking about the whole... The fact that there's war, you know, is quite a difficult thing to write comedically about.
Yeah.
Because you do have to kind of... I think there was a point where we agreed that if it wasn't for the goodies winning...
Yeah.
It would be a gritty and horrible book.
Yes, it would. Yeah.
About the drudgeries of war.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't remember
which book that was about, but yeah.
Probably all of them.
One of them at least.
Gritty and sharp. Yeah. That's a really interesting question because it is actually, I think, quite an interesting setting. And there are lots of interesting things that can happen. But I can't imagine myself writing a totally straight-faced book in that world.
Right.
Because some of the things in it are sort of comical in themselves.
Yeah.
I think there's a kind of comedy like you get in something like Futurama or Terry Gilliam's Brazil, where the world itself is slapstick.
Yeah.
You know, like you fire people through tubes and, you know, to get to places and all this kind of stuff, and it's very easy to do a science fiction. I don't think there's all that much in that in Space Captain Smith, but there is a certain amount, and it will be hard to go back to that world without acknowledging the silliness of all those sort of things.
Yeah.
But I could imagine something perhaps a little bit more serious, perhaps an adventure story with jokes rather than the comedy story with a bit of adventure.
Good.
So I could see something like that. I mean, if you look at some of Terry Pratchett's books, he's got serious ideas in them.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, definitely. So yeah, maybe.
Okay, moving on.
Mm.
Stephen asks, when Mr. Frost is writing, does he favour porcupine or raven quills for his inkwell scribulations?
My inkwell scribulations?
I've heard him play.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? Yeah.
He's one of those hip-hoppy rap chaps.
Congratulations. Peacock. Finest peacock.
Finest peacock.
And as for the pen...
Hey!
Yeah, peacock.
Right. Thomas asks, when does this epic interview take place, may I ask? I probably should have replied to that. it is taking place, what is it?
It's now, 15th? Isn't it? Yeah, I think it's 15th.
It's the 15th of September.
About 9:15.
Yeah, it's taking place.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Right now, man.
9:11 as we speak.
Well, that solved that.
Yeah, that's
pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to get involved myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen again. Same Stephen.
Is it same Stephen? Not just a collection.
No, there has been a different Stephen. This is this is the Stephen we know, or I know rather. Official listener 007. You probably know him better.
Oh,
as
wow,
this Stephen. Why does Mr. Frost remove his typical writing character in preparation for the Space Captain Smith books? When reading them aloud to the workhouse orphans, I feel a true rendition is incomplete without adding back the necessary amount of erms and pen clicks to create the necessary Frost cohesion effect.
Well, Stephen, I'm glad you asked that. Click. Yeah.
You did the without thinking then.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
that's nice.
I did.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. Because
I've spent all my life editing you in one way or another, haven't I? Either your books or this podcast.
Bloody hell, that's like some kind of William Gibson thing, isn't it? That I'm entirely a construct of you.
Jeez.
Which is, Jesus, you could have made a better job of that.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, man. Come on,
basically, stop saying and stop clicking your pen.
Okay.
It's fine, go ahead. I don't mind. See, I did it.
Yeah, you did.
Ren asks, Pincers of Death title, is it a play on the Bert Chance song Needle of Death?
It might be.
It's a good question in and of itself.
Yeah, it is.
But maybe we can move that question to where have all the titles come from? God Emperor of Didcot's fairly obvious.
It's fairly obvious. That's a spoof of God Emperor Dune. Space Gunner Smith was, I think it's one of those titles that I'd written it. And for ages it was called Space Biggles.
Oh, right.
And I realised, of course, you know.
Spit on the nose.
Yeah, obvious that one. You know, there might be some problems with, you know, Captain W.E. Johns' estate. Might get a visit from the lawyers. Get shot up by a biplane in the small hours.
Yes.
You know.
As often happens.
As often happens in these problems. I think it was actually a sort of late on edition where I was suddenly thinking, God, what do I actually call this thing? And it just happened, but you know, that kind of works. It's got a kind of nice feel to it. And
it's got a good ring to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. Didn't there used to be a comedy called Citizen Smith or something? Yes. Like that? Right, yeah. Okay. Well, it's almost a bit like that. It's kind of, you know, he's just an average space captain, kind of. But it just sounded nice, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. God Emperor Didcot is obviously a spoof of Dune. Wrath of the Lemming Men, I think, was deliberately because it sounds so pulpy.
Yeah.
Or is it Wrath of the Lemming Men? I'm not quite know how to pronounce that. Yeah, it was done deliberately pulpy. Game of Battleships.
Not deliberately Wrath of Khan or anything, then.
No, but it does help. So, it kind of helps, yeah.
Rings the way. Game of Battleships, that's an obvious reference as well, right?
It is a reference to the Game of Battleships, you know, where you choose where your battleship is.
Right.
It's not a reference to Game of Thrones.
I wasn't thinking Game of Thrones. I was thinking, it's not as obvious as I thought, clearly, and especially now I thought about it. I was thinking Player of Games.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is actually a chapter, I think, in End of Empires called The Player of Board Games.
Right.
Maybe where they have to go to a simulation, a war sort of war simulation. Game of Battleships. Yeah, and it also kind of works for the book, because in the Game of Battleships, you can't see where the enemy battleship is, so there's a bit of that. Battleships was also because I noticed that I hadn't really done a book with a space battle at that point.
Right.
I thought, well, I'd like to put a space battle in.
Yeah, it was so, very planet-based.
Yeah, that. Yeah. End of Empires, I don't know, it just sounded good.
It's quite Star Wars-y.
It is quite Star Wars-y.
But that's because of the word Empire, we can't think past that anymore.
And it is kind of quite... I suppose it is the edge of the Space Empire, and it's the edge of the Lemming Empire, if that's...
Yeah.
So it kind of works in that way, so yeah.
Can you tell us where that comes from, or is it going to spoil it?
The Pincers of Death.
Yeah, I mean, do we want to know?
Well, that's a good question.
We don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I think I'll leave that one. Yeah.
For the reader.
Yeah, I think I have to work out what or who the Pincers of Death are.
Good. Yes. Thomas again asks, were the Malak in... How do you pronounce that? Malak?
I would pronounce it Malak, yeah.
In any way based on the Gurkhas, fearless in battle, originally fought against the British, became massively respected by the British for fighting prowess, etc.
Okay, long answer here. Okay, yeah, that's actually quite a sensible question. There is a certain element of that, actually. It's not supposed to be a direct comparison, but obviously, I think Ian Banks, what was it called, that book we both read? The Algebraist?
Yeah.
I think the Algebraist had something quite similar, that there was a space empire that sort of recruited various species and for various reasons. And I think in the Algebraist there was one that was sort of almost indestructible, which made up the army. So I think the space empire works in a kind of similar way to the Victorian Empire, like that.
Yeah.
And if they can find people who are tough, they'll take them on. So I don't think you're supposed to think he is literally a Gurkha in the same way you're not supposed to think he is literally a Zulu or literally a predator. But he gets close to being friends with us.
Gosh, I never even thought.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Now that you mention it.
That's amazing. It's a likeness. Yeah.
A coincidental.
Purely, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there is that, and there's that sort of, I think particularly in End of Empires, where we see more of these sort of space army, especially the bit out in the colonies, there's probably isn't in them that. One of the things about Surik that's quite good is that, From my writing point of view, is that he's always the outsider in their empire, in their little group of people. And he's always got this sort of outsider's view, which means he can make amusing mistakes about things. But it also means that he's able to have this sort of wry sort of, you know, look aside at the kind of stupidity of the human characters.
Yeah.
So, you know, in some ways he is like a sort of visitor from another country or something like that. But it's not supposed to be in a particular country, but it's probably a tough one. So, yes. Yeah.
Right. Last one from Facebook.
Uh-huh.
Simon. In fact, I might answer this question for you, or at least partly.
Okay.
It's a three-part question.
Okay.
Part one, which of the Space Captain Smith characters are based on real individuals or composites of said individuals? Part two, do they know? And part three, what was their reaction? So let me have first run at that.
All right.
Because, gosh, I can't remember which book it is now. So as a proofreader for Toby, and continuity error, and it's Wrath of the Lemming Men. Toby's pointing at Wrath of the Lemming Men to let me know which book
I think I know where this is going.
Toby wrote me into it, and so I got to read it and found this character who I can't remember his name. Jones the Laser, but he had a three-part name, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Well, the
anyway, this character totally and utterly didn't work, and it was totally obvious that it was me. To me, because I'm Welsh, but I don't sound Welsh. I don't drink tea or coffee. I tend to drink fizzy drinks. And I've got a three-part name, so I'm Owen Lloyd Roberts. So this character had a three-part name. He didn't sound Welsh in any way. He didn't drink tea, but which was clearly referenced, but had no kind of humour value or anything. So as the reader, if you didn't know me, you'd just be like, well, I don't understand why this guy, why it's been drawn attention to. Why? What's the point of that? So I had the dubious honour of editing myself out of one of Toby's books, because I just thought, this character, you've got to put some boyos.
I think there's some isits at the end of the list. Yeah.
And you've got to Welsh this up.
Yeah.
Because this guy's, it's referenced numerous times that he's Welsh, and he's clearly supposed to be very Welsh, which I have very Welsh heritage, and I have a very Welsh name, and that's it. Which just didn't work. It was ridiculous.
We had to slip a few men of Harlech in there, didn't we?
Yeah. So it was really. I knew that there was a character based on me, and my reaction was, Toby, you've got to take most of this character and rewrite it because it's just shit.
That's what your lawyers said too.
Yeah, it's just really upsetting to see yourself written in print and go, this is rubbish. My character's not funny or anything. He's kind of like vaguely noble and vaguely Welsh around the edges.
That's like, halfway like you.
That is halfway like me. Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, anybody else, Tobes?
Anyone else? I've certainly known people who've looked a bit like some of the characters.
Right.
Someone once told me there was quite a bit of me in Space Captain
Smith. I think a lot of people would say there were a lot of bits of you in various characters.
I think I'm spread out between the main four characters.
Yeah.
And some of it's much more obvious than others. Like obviously Space Captain Smith and, my skull collection. So I think I'm probably in the four of them. What was the question? Are people I know?
Yeah, are there people, not necessarily that you know, I don't think it was. Hang on a minute, I'll go back to it. Based on real individuals or composites of said individuals.
Oh, okay, well, there certainly are characters in there who are based on real individuals who I am not going to meet because they're dead.
Right.
Definitely. And, some of the characters, definitely. I think sometimes you have a mental image of other people as well, even if they're not like the character when you're writing them. Trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, Major Wayne Scott. Excuse me. There is a historical guy who is actually quite similar. There's a few others, I think. I think sometimes if you try and write somebody as somebody, you find that by the time you got to the end, because you subconsciously put your own interpretation on, they become a different character.
Yes.
So quite often you think, well, I'm going to make this type of character rather than make him specific guy. But yeah, there are a few.
I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of things that are going to crop up just because the books are referencing other things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the fun of Space Captain Smith, isn't it?
Spotting
the references and, everything.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got Rick.
Yeah, Rick Deckard.
You've got Deckard in there, and you've got all sorts of... yeah. Don't worry, it's not important.
I was actually quite amused...
Stop playing with that turtle.
This one's back. I was quite amused playing, Fallout 4. There's a robot detective in that.
Is it?
Yeah, who's quite... more obviously a clanky robot.
Excellent.
But it did amuse me that he actually is a lot like how I imagine Rick Deckard to be. So there's a... Yeah, I mean, again, it's a sort of archetype.
I always have... do you remember a sort of animated... I think it was a stop-motion animated thing that was... Was he Sam... He wasn't Sam Spade. Jack Hammer or something like that.
Oh.
There was a PI that was a tool of some kind. I can't quite bring it to mind.
Was he called Sledgehammer?
I don't know. It might have been. But it was a play on Sam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those PI novels. But anyway, that's always what is in my mind. I'll see if I find a picture of him later. On to, I was going to say more sensible questions, but I've just panned through them. Alex has chipped in a fair number here, so that's good. Because he's got the level right of... He's a fan of the podcast, which says it all, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's number nine.
Sorry, it's just I'm more enthusiastic. So that's, yeah, he's a good bloke.
Right, so this is a nice question. I'm just trying to put them mentally in a sensible order.
Okay.
I think there are some overlap here.
Right.
But what made you want to become an author?
I really don't know, actually.
Yeah, you've always written.
Yeah. I've always written it since I was about 12 or 13, and I really don't know. You know, I mean, you meet people who are really, really into things and they're massive fans, and sometimes, you know, they read an awful lot of whoever author and they're huge fans of them. I don't know what the tipping point was which made me stop reading and start writing, and I have no idea about that. So, yeah, it's a really hard question to answer. It's very strange. I suppose in some ways, I mean, it's lucky to know something that you really want to do
when you're young. Absolutely.
But I really couldn't say what it was. There's an appeal in creating things which I've always had.
Which we've discussed previously on the podcast. Yeah, absolutely.
You should check that podcast out. It's a good one.
Brilliant podcast. What's it called, Tobes?
Well, I think it's Radio Charades. I've always had that.
Pronouncing charades wrong.
Charades? I've always had that. But I don't think it's very hard. I mean, I think that probably would have been about the same time I started to write. So, no, I really don't know.
Yeah.
But it's something I always wanted to do. It was always an ambition. And, I've been writing for a long time. Which means I've hopefully written all the rubbish words out of my system.
Where do you get your inspirations from?
Absolutely anywhere, really. I think if you're writing something like science fiction, especially if you're in a sort of narrow genre like steampunk or something like that, I think you still have to start looking outside it for inspiration because you run the risk of just shuffling an extremely small pack of cards.
Sure.
And quite a lot of the inspiration is actually caricatured real-life things. The example that springs to mind is in End of Empires, there's this sort of robot tomb guardian thing called the Mechanical Man-Eater. And that was actually inspired by a thing called Tipu's Tiger, which is a kind of wind-up automaton that was made in about 1800 by a guy called Tipu Sultan, who was a ruler of India, to celebrate his victory over the British. And it's like we wind it up and it kind of claws this dead British guy that's like a mechanical tiger. And I kind of thought, well, let's just take that to its logical conclusion. It actually is like a proper robot tiger.
Yeah.
And thought, well, we need a voice for a proper robot tiger, and I can't think of many tigers that talk apart from Tigger, and he's kind of out, so let's do the other one. So, yeah, and it's, a lot of it is just exaggeration.
Right.
And sometimes you think, well, I just need a funny person here. What sort of person would be doing this? And, you know, there's usually a sort of crazy answer to it. So, yeah, yeah.
Cool. Alex did say I should answer these questions as well.
Right.
But where I get my inspirations from. Well, I'm on a lot of drugs at the minute. They're supposed to be pain medication, so maybe that's it. Where do I get my inspiration from?
Why did you decide to do this podcast?
I have no filter.
Right.
That's one of my charms. It just comes out of my face.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question three, and Alex, as official listener number nine, is entitled to ask us at least eight questions. You know, that's how it works.
Oh, right.
So this is his question number three now.
Okay.
Which is, I think, a direct reference to one of our podcasts.
Ooh.
If you were an evil villain, what pet animal would you have? Now, I established on that podcast a potato was the answer for me, because it would just freak...
That does make you seem absolutely deranged, doesn't
totally
it?
Totally barking.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
That's my animal, that's not yours.
So, right, okay. So
you've got to answer the question.
What kind of animal? I don't know, maybe, I was going to say naked mole rat, but actually they look really horrible. And having quite a horrible one in your hand doesn't look right.
I think it would make it look like you had intended to have a glove puppet and then just forgotten.
That's true, actually. It
maybe
would.
Been in the bath a long time and got really wrinkly.
Yeah, I mean, if you're holding this thing, it probably would look like you just had the chest burster come out of you.
Yeah.
So I don't think they can mold that. Maybe a meerkat.
Right.
Because it could just kind of look around at important moments.
Well, they're renowned for being evil bastards as well.
Are they?
Yeah, they eat their young and the young of their friends.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I'll go have meerkats. Yeah. In fact, I could probably give an evil villain speech about the greatness of the meerkat just based on that.
Right.
So, yeah, I like that. Yeah.
If I had to have an animal instead of, say, a root vegetable, I would maybe a scorpion. Scorpions are cool.
Yeah, hard to pet.
True.
Outside an evil petting zoo, but yeah.
Question 4 for Alex. What does the fox say? And that's what the fox would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well done.
Question, really can't talk.
Question 5. Do you like chunky or smooth peanut butter?
I don't know, chunky.
I'll go either way on a peanut butter.
Really?
Depending on mood.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because sometimes I like a smooth, cheap, high sugar content peanut
yeah.
butter. And sometimes I want a classy, whole nut, crunchy nonsense.
Is this a general trend? Is it that the more authentic food is, the more bits it has in it? Because, yeah, like, you know the orange juice that you buy?
Yeah.
Really only when you're hungover. You know, that the one with bits in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing as more sophisticated than non-bitty. Of course, you've got milk with bits in. That's bad. But
and if you like that drivel, maybe you'd like our podcast.
Just us answering similar questions.
And we've got more.
Oh, good.
Question 6. Do you like Marmite?
Yeah.
Yes, all right.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Question 7. This is a good one. What do you want to be when you grow up? A dinosaur astronaut. A robot dinosaur astronaut.
Who drives a train?
Maybe.
Yeah.
No, I'd like to be graphic designer.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. I think I'd like to be a rich novelist.
Oh, yeah. Can I just be rich?
Yeah, that's definitely rich.
Just, yeah. Money. Question 8. Do you like ants?
They're all right. They're interesting rather than lovable, aren't they, really?
He's trying to lure you out as a enemy of the empire.
Yeah, I mean, they're interesting, but probably in not particularly nice way. I have actually got somewhere...
A bunch of ants.
Oh my god. No, I've actually got somewhere a book review which is written really, really seriously by George Orwell in about 1944.
What are you going to say of your book?
Yeah, my book. Disappointing.
Like, George Orwell wrote about your book. Yeah, bloody hell.
Made me laugh. What the hell? Yeah, and it actually says at the end, it is, was it? Something, it is fortunate for mankind that ants are not larger. Yeah. So, you know, they're interesting rather than lovable, to be honest. Especially ones with big bums.
Yeah, it all depends what the ant is doing and where. Like, yeah. If he's just in my garden, I'm all right with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's fairly industrious.
If he's in my house, he is the enemy.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If he's on my turf or my picnic.
Yeah.
No, wait. If he's on my turf,
he's all right, he's actually, all right, yeah. But
if he's on my turf,
yeah.
He's not all right.
No.
Right, okay.
He's got to understand that. There's a thin line there.
Thanks, Alex, for those. Well, Tom, it may or may not be the same Tom we've heard from previously, because this one's an email. This is epic.
My goodness.
He's broken it into five topics.
So, okay.
So brace yourself.
Right. Right on both sides of the paper.
Science is the first topic.
Science.
If I'm travelling in an Imperial Dreadnought from Earth to Yulia, is that how I say it?
Yeah, Yulia.
At full speed with a new shunt drive and a lemming bend, man is travelling in the opposite direction at half that speed. Exactly how much fun will I have when I lock on and incinerate the furry bastard?
Vast amounts. You'll be immensely satisfied by this activity. Okay. And it will speed you all the way to his home planet, whereupon you can civilise it from orbit.
Good stuff. Political. We often learn from the past, but can we learn from the future?
Well, shouldn't we will be learned from the future?
Will we have had learned from the future?
Ooh, maybe.
I found a new clicky noise.
It's good that.
This magnet on my iPad.
Oh, that's great. That's a good clicky noise.
That's
like
going to annoy me when I edit this.
That pleases me. Oh, yeah, God. I like that. Because I haven't got a clicky pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, can we learn from the future?
Will we have learned?
I think we can have.
It's a tense issue.
Yeah, it is. You're pulling an Uncle Fester face. Yeah. It's more like your Uncle Fester shoulders, really.
The British Space Empire has a very no-nonsense attitude towards skullduggery and general poor manners. What can we learn today from this in dealing with the miscreants we find ourselves unamused by? That's the in-depth question.
Gosh, that is an in-depth question. I think that we can learn that you can sort of... Yeah, the enforcement of manners is significantly easier with robots than orbital dreadnoughts, I think. Yeah, other than that, it's just like kind of having to be nice to people and persuade them and stuff.
So, pretty much what Al Capone said about nice manners and a gun or something. He said something about you can get further with a kind word and a gun than you can with a kind word.
Yeah, that works, yeah. Yeah. Nothing is certain except death and not paying taxes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's fashion now.
Oh my goodness.
Still fucked up. Smart very much seems to be the accepted norm in the future, but where do you stand on formal occasions where one must make a special effort? Spiffing for chaps and smashing for top totty?
I am both, actually. Yeah.
Wait, what?
These books I've written. Spiffing for chaps, scouting for boys, and what was the other one? Smashing for top totty. Yeah, I think any of those is an acceptable sartorial arrangement, actually. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how the people in the Space Empire dress. I mean, I think I've always been a little bit vague about things like that, which is kind of, you know, you can draw your own conclusions to quite how steampunky it is and whether they're wearing Victorian uniforms or something a bit more futuristic or whatever. So, yeah.
For the listener's note,
yes,
a podcast is definitely the best place to ask Toby about fashion.
It is, because if you can't see me, yeah, I know, it's just dreadful. It's
quite hard to take
it in. It's an absolute disgrace, yeah.
Where do you get the ruff from?
I don't know.
Ruffs are us.
Ruffs are us, yeah. And feeding rough is another one of my classics.
Secret Service training is the next topic for Tom. How long is the course? And by that, I mean just how many episodes of Danger Mouse does one have to watch to fully qualify?
Well, I mean, I think if you're properly equipped, you'll have a neural shunt by which you can just download the episodes of Danger Mouse into your sort of cerebellum.
And would.
I mean, if you really want to take the crash course, you could download The Prisoner. But, I mean, you'll have to absorb all that and figure out what was going on. So, you know, that'll take a while. Yeah. So, you know, it varies. I actually watched Danger Mouse a while back.
So do I.
And it was bloody weird.
It is. Yeah, we have the full box set.
Do you?
Yeah, for my son.
Right, say. Yeah, yeah.
He does ask for it occasionally. He wants the mouse occasionally.
Okay, right. Yeah, I mean, it was extremely strange. The one I've
still good.
Yeah, the one I saw was something about some washing machines.
Right.
It was like watching satire when the thing that the satire has been about has long gone.
You remember Count Duckula, which is a spiritual successor?
Yeah, was it by the same people?
The same people. He's in Danger Mouse, which I do faintly remember. But what I didn't remember was that he reoccurs about three times, four times.
Oh, really?
And his dastardly plots are always related to the fact that he wants to have his own TV show. So it's, I don't know whether that's a deliberate thing on their part of just kind of going, yeah, we're going to make his TV show.
They were playing the long game though, weren't they?
Yeah, playing a really long game.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah. My brother was telling me that Danger Mouse, you know, he's very, very often off to the Arctic or Antarctic.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because they had so little money, they couldn't pay for the colours, because doing anything in colour is that much more expensive. So, which is why you've got panels and panels and panels of just white.
Yeah. They should have done that thing where you run off the edge of the screen, have an adventure out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them. I bet they're having one. Anyway, onwards with Tom's questions. This is the last of Tom's categories. Tea.
Tea.
The acquisition of tea left a bitter taste in a certain country's mouth. Were reparations ever made, perhaps in the form of a year's supply of tiffin, or maybe a Jacob's Cracker gift box?
Presumably you're referring to Didcot Prime here. I don't know what's going on. Well, I do know what's going on in Didcot Prime, actually, because without giving anything away, we do learn a little bit about Didcot and the Pincers of Death.
Do we?
Yes. So, you know, I think stay tuned for that one.
Right. Stakes are high.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Faye asks. Well, actually,
hello, Faye.
I accused Faye. I didn't accuse Faye. I asked her a leading question, which was, do you just read Toby's books or do you listen to our podcast as well? Because she's my friend first, right?
Right.
And she admitted that, no, she doesn't listen to the podcast. She just reads. She just reads your books, so...
Right.
She probably never listened to this. She did say she might.
Okay.
Anyway, if you're listening, Faye, hello.
Hello, Faye.
Will we get to meet any of Surik's spawn in later stages of their terrifying development? Or is that spoilers?
Well, one of the things that, you know, you finally write the books and you think, oh, that's funny, I'll put it in, is that whenever you're putting a joke thing in, you're building the world a bit more.
Yeah.
And so I didn't quite know what actually happened to Surik Spawn before he actually had them. And the answer is he gets rid of them as quickly as possible. And the whole sort of Malak life cycle thing kind of just happened in sort of weird spurts, which is ironic, really, because that's what they do. And it's a bit like Edric the Helmsman, I think he is, who's, you know, there as a spoof of the Guild Navigator.
Yes.
And he's just there for that, but now he is a part of their sort of life cycle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I actually think it would be really quite entertaining to find Son of Surik. Goodness knows what he'd be like. I mean, he might be quite respectable, like Morgar, Surik's brother.
Yeah, could go.
Because we get the impression Surik is a bit of a throwback, actually. So, yeah, I mean, that'd be really interesting. There are no children of Surik, as far as we know, in the Princes of Death, but it would be quite entertaining if one of them showed up, I think. So, yes.
He says like he doesn't know.
And Faye gets credit actually for recognising one of the really obscure jokes in I think it was End of Empires. So, yeah.
I didn't know there was credit to be awarded. Toast.
Well, it's always nice.
Do we have to send in and go like, I spotted this reference. I like this joke. Because I didn't like any of them. They were rotten.
You just crossed
the were good. They were good the first time when I said them in the pub.
You were just cross because you weren't in it anymore.
You and your lawyery ways are like, now they're my property.
Well, you'll be back. Are you Leakio Leak or whatever?
Faye got an obscure reference. Good. Yep. Well done, Faye.
Yep.
Right. We're cycling fast towards the end of the questions, but I'm sure we could say more. These are some excellent ones from another official listener.
Excellent.
This is official listener 10, or as he's sometimes known, Jack.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Jack. Question one of four.
Mm-hmm.
How similar is the finished book to your first draft or idea of the story?
Generally quite similar, actually.
With the exception of Space Captain Smith? Because that evolved over a few years, right?
That evolved over a while, but the others have generally been quite similar. A lot of going back is tidying up and sort of neatening it and being a bit, you may find this shocking and horrible, cutting out the bad jokes and putting the good ones in. Quite similar. It's usually a matter of kind of tidying it up and polishing it. There was one where I had a character who I deleted because he was just an extra villain.
Right.
And I thought, well, what the hell's he doing here? He's just
detracting focus.
Yeah. Right, he's just filling up space, so we'll get rid of him. Generally speaking, I think part of it is because the books don't have parallel plots in the way that, you know, a more complicated story might do.
Sophisticated novel.
Sophisticated, a grown-up book, where people do different
That's
things.
That's what my mum keeps saying, isn't it? She's read them, but she does keep saying, when's he going to write a proper book?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's not my fault. It's the Booker Prize people. If they want to tell me it's proper, it's proper. So, I think I don't really have that problem of sort of finding that a character's in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever. So, you know, that's usually been okay. I think End of Empires has a slightly more complicated bit where the characters all split up.
Right.
And that was surprisingly hard to write because you didn't have the same sounding boards of, you know, of being able to crack the same jokes about them all. And you had to get them back to the same place at the same time.
Timings.
But generally speaking, I think the first drafts are actually quite the backbone. No, the backbone is basically there in the book.
Cool. Interesting what you say about editing, and more to the point, editing the comedy.
Mm.
Because of it, I suppose that our podcast is supposed to be comedy.
It amuses me.
It's amusing. The thing that I find very difficult, and I reckon that must be difficult with the writing as well, is that when I edit it, the editing process is so sort of meticulous.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find it funny.
Yeah.
Except if it's something that particularly tickles me.
Yeah.
And actually, if I get carried away and start finding it funny, my editing gets worse.
Yeah.
So, and some of the things that you kind of think, well, actually, I could just take that entire little chunk out because it wasn't very funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes I find it very difficult to work out whether it was or was not funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's kind of smirk worthy or actually funny.
Yeah. No, I find something like that. When I'm editing, sometimes I go back and I think, well, This sentence, why is it here? And, you know, basically one of the rules is just to get rid of the unnecessary words.
Yeah.
And then you'll go down a couple of paragraphs and you'll see, it sets up a joke later on. It goes back in. Yeah.
I'm so clever,
gosh. It's almost like I didn't write it, that someone else did. And, that's quite tricky, I think. So the editing of the comedy is actually quite hard because you're editing jokes and the jokes sometimes take a while to settle in.
Sure.
you sort of think, oh, well, I see why I've done this in this scene because it's building up to this, or, you know. So, yeah, you're often punning on an individual word or something like that, which means that you can't use the word before.
Yeah.
So, you know, suddenly you find, like, oh, I've written corridor here, well, I'll write passage now here. No, because I'm making a hilarious joke about passage later on, which I wouldn't write because it's
childish. I can't imagine.
So, you know,
cool, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing is tricky. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It is difficult to work out. And you do get kind of a bit too close to it, and it's quite hard to work out what the good, yeah. Yeah, the best jokes are, yeah. And what aren't. And, yeah.
And then also trying to discern what is something that's funny to you,
yeah.
But not anybody else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
holding on to that is quite difficult.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Cool. On with Jack's questions then. Number two, do you have a favourite character?
That is really hard to answer.
Whilst you think about it, I'll... Because I think that this goes back to what you were saying about how amazing it is to find people who like your book and,
yep.
And like these people in Australia putting on the play and stuff. People coming to you and saying, I love this character.
Yeah, yeah.
Must be very rewarding.
Oh, hugely, yeah. And
because in a way, in the same way that I remember you saying about a couple of reviews that people had said about your books that this one was the best one.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can compare them must mean they have quality.
Yeah, one is like less dreadful than the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it might be like comparing, you know, being punched in the groin or being kicked in the shin, but yeah. Do I have a favourite character? Not really, actually. I mean, some are easy. The two easiest characters to write are Cirque du Soleil, funnily enough, and Polycarpeth.
Right.
Because they're quite rounded characters, and they've been in the book for quite a long time, but you also know pretty much exactly what they're going to do when they come on.
Okay.
And you can usually predict their response. So they're quite easy to write, and also, because they're quite rounded and they've got quite a few facets, they're not just one-joke characters. They can sort of be amusing in a variety of situations. Cirque gets things wrong, and Carveth is quite cynical and has a sort of, you know, cynical view on what's going on. And that, you know, immediately generates jokes. Smith and Rihanna, they're very good fun to write as well. They're very likeable. I think some of the minor characters, you don't want to put them on in the sort of front of the sort of screen too much.
Yeah.
Because they're so grotesque. But they are a lot of fun to write. I mean, I found Wayne Scott always very entertaining because he takes his trousers off and that's funny. And also Captain Fitzroy, plays Captain Smith, sort of semi-rival type person. She amuses me, but I think, you know, if you were to write a book about her, it might get a little bit wearing.
Yeah, or cruel.
Yeah, or possibly, yeah, because, you know... Actually, she's basically loosely based on someone I used to know, but anyway. It's that's a difficult one. So those kind of characters can be a lot of fun when they come on.
Yeah.
But then you realise you can't have as much fun as you might want. And I think this actually does happen in I was going to say real-world comedies. That's not what I mean. bigger comedies where you've got a comedy character.
Yeah.
I think Friends did this, didn't they? They made a spin-off and it was very unpopular.
With one of the Joey did.
I
think it was called Joey.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay. I think a few other comedies have done this.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons sometimes why the wacky character is fun is so popular is because you don't see them very much.
Yeah.
You know. So there are a lot of characters I really enjoy writing out.
Cool. I've got two more from Jack. I'm going to flip the order and ask you question four before question three.
Okay.
Do you find it difficult not to write in the style of your favourite authors?
Well, my favourite authors, or at least the ones that sort of have struck me the most, are Mervyn Peake, who wrote the heavily poetical and quite dark Gormenghast trilogy.
Obviously that enters a lot into Space Captain Smith.
Absolutely, yeah. Very heavy influence of Space Captain Smith. You know, George Orwell, of course, who was, you know, a master of merriment.
Yep.
And Raymond Chandler, whose jolly and positive outlook has, you know, fueled many of you. Actually, he's probably the closest.
Yeah, I was just thinking, he's the closest.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, at least you've got Dreckett.
Yeah, Dreckett, who is the walking Raymond Chandler character.
Yeah.
God, his language is really hard to do, actually.
Yeah?
It's surprising how difficult.
Without it sounding just nonsense really poorly executed.
Yeah, he's quite a hard character to write. It's nice when you get, there's a joke in... The Pincers of Death, which I'm not going to say here.
Oh, hey, there's a joke in The Pincers of Death.
Yeah, yeah.
Buy it at your shops.
Yeah,
Christmas present.
There's absolutely.
There's a joke in it.
Yeah, and you can quality assure that because it's one of yours.
The author has promised one joke.
I stole it. Yeah, it's nice when he gets something. Yeah, you get a good Drekker joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that Raymond Chon is one of the biggest influence on this jolly book set in space.
Yeah, I think that's a no.
I think that's a big no.
I don't think he has any difficulty in avoiding.
The one that I think, in terms of style, is actually Lucky Jim by Kingsley Amis.
Right.
Which I think has got some very funny descriptive writing in it, and that's probably the only thing I can think of.
And what was the hardest part of reading... Oh, God. Reading from an iPad... when you're illiterate. I'll do that again.
Yeah, go on. I think you should. Yeah.
But I'm leaving this bit in. It'll be brilliant.
Okay, it'll be awesome.
Yeah. Question three is, what was the hardest part of writing the first book? Getting it published?
Getting it published was hard. Deciding to keep writing it actually was quite difficult.
Because, as I recall, this was light relief.
Yeah.
Because you were getting quite depressed by your heavy fantasy novel.
Yeah, and its lack of success. And I think Smith was a bit of a vent like that. And part of it's actually known to continue. I mean, as
whether
I was saying,
it wasn't just a joke between us.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying, it did require that kind of nod from yourself to say, this is good, someone else might enjoy it. And I think it does take a certain amount of daring to say, right, I'm going to write this book and it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
How anyone can get on the stage and tell jokes is anything.
No, quite. I mean, we've spent quite a long time not admitting that our podcast is supposed to be funny.
Yes.
Which
I'm going to keep not admitting that.
Yeah, I don't know what it's supposed to be if it's not supposed to be funny.
No.
So,
Yeah. Actually, I probably should mention Mark Radcliffe and the Boy Lard under my comedic influences.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and Vic and Bob. As Dave alluded to.
Yeah.
That's it for the questions.
Super.
So, I mean, thank you very, very much to the people who wanted to ask Toby questions.
Yeah, they've been good selection, actually. It doesn't make you think. Because quite a lot of what you do in writing is just kind of like, oh, this sounds fun, I'll do this. Yeah. And it's actually quite interesting to be, to be put on the spot and say, well, why did you do that? And that's quite hard to answer, actually.
Why did you do that?
Yeah. What was with that Jane Austen alien overlap thing?
There are some questions for me as well, because we've got to keep our fans of the podcast happy.
Absolutely.
As well, because it's not like there's an overlap.
No.
Most of the people who listen to the podcast, I don't think they knew you wrote books.
No, I think it's entirely
And most of the people that read your books don't know that you stole all your jokes.
No.
Yeah, so
you got any new ones?
No.
Oh.
I haven't drunk anything recently. I don't joke.
Oh.
Without alcohol. So, questions for me from our Radio Shiraz listeners. This is from listener number, I think, somewhere around 12.
If I could operate the iPad, I'd ask you these questions.
Oh, by all means. There are only two questions. So, and one of them we've already dealt with, because we've got Alex's questions that I've already answered. And then there's one from this, I don't know how you pronounce that name just there.
Toby says, why are you so awesome, Owen? What is your secret?
It's all about contrast.
Really?
My secret. I've always spent a lot of effort on surrounding myself with people who are less awesome. Just because it's their contrast. You stand next to them and everybody's like, who's that dude?
It's a flawless plan.
Why am I so awesome? A lot of people ask me that. It's just...
My other question would have been, why you like that and how did you get that way?
Is that really your face? good. Yeah. So,
we've had a lot of fun answering your questions, actually.
That was really good. Yeah. Some insight from the mind behind awesome series of books.
Thank you.
So,
next time.
I've enjoyed them all. It's going to be weird reading it for the first time. Not on something that I've printed out.
Yeah. Something legible.
Yeah, it's all been printed out previously, it'd be nice to have it straight in the book.
Yeah.
You're going to do an event in Forbidden Planet?
Hopefully so. Still organising that
fingers
one.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It will be up on the website as soon as I know.
Okay, cool. How can people keep up to date with Space Captain Smith?
They can go and look on the Space Captain Smith Facebook page.
Right, there's a Facebook page.
There is.
There used to be a website. Is there still a website?
There is still a website. It's still a Toby Frost website.
But Facebook's all you need these days, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm on Twitter as well. Yes.
Amazing. Yes, we talk on Twitter sometimes.
We do, don't we? Yeah. Yeah. I'm the Space Kevin Smith. And
you're Isambard Smith.
I think I am Isambard Smith.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, Radio Charades will be the first to hear of any exciting developments.
Yeah, we'll keep bringing you the highest quality Toby Frost material.
Absolutely.
After the books have drained him of all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Radio
Charades at AOL.gmail.com.
Radio Charades is also on Facebook, which is easier than our Yahoo address, which Toby just read out.
MySpace,
isn't it? If you'd like to talk directly to us at Radio Charades, it's radioshrads@gmail.com.
That's the fella.
But, you know, don't feel you have to. But maybe you enjoyed the gibberish.
Yes.
Find us on iTunes and we'll keep churning out the gibberish.
We certainly shall.
Normal
service will resume shortly.
As normal as we get.
Well, that's true.
All right. Well, let's call it a day then, Tom.
Well, thank you, Owen.
Yeah. Buy a book, people. Come on.
Read a book.
Read a book, damn it. That's the other comedic influence.
Actually, the Tick. The Tick and Tom Lehrer.
Tom Lehrer. You've got you've probably got more comedic influences than you do artistic.
Literary ones.
Right.
Right.
Buy the book in October. Pincers of Death in all good bookstores.
Absolutely, and Amazon.
And Amazon. Yeah, if you want it cheap, get it there.
Yeah.
Probably. But they don't pay their taxes. Don't fund them, scumbags.
Quite.
Yeah. Right. Bye-bye. All right.
See you soon. Bye.